Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, and just about any other audio app. Head on over to the website America Out Loud and check out the articles and podcasts. They just celebrated their big five-year anniversary and have updated. We have a big show tonight with journalist Heather Robinson, who will be here discussing her recent article in the New York Post. First off, how are you doing tonight, Rob?
No, I'm doing good. Glad that we're able to bring back the journalist, a real journalist, Heather Robinson, back on the show. As you guys might have known, that she appeared on the show a few weeks ago, and we were discussing, you know, what journalism is and journalism through the eyes of a real journalist. Because I think we can all agree that what we see right now is an aberration as to what journalism should be. I went to journalism school for 4 years, and I got to tell you, what I see right now is scaring me. And not too long ago, Lester Holt, I think it's NBC, came on TV and he gave this diatribe about reporting both sides and that it's not necessarily accurate and that you don't have to do it because no one is interested in what someone else has to say. That really troubled me because the role of a journalist is to be fair and impartial as much as you can and report the news. When you put your opinion in the news, you should state clearly that it's your opinion and not a fact. There's a big difference. But his position was that I'm going to give you my news, and even if there's something else out there that might counter what I'm saying, you don't need to know it because I'm giving you the news. And that's extremely dangerous, especially in today's environment with everything that's taking place. You look at the border and how the media has played it up to say that there isn't a crisis at the border. And they've been saying that since Biden took office. There's no crisis, there's no crisis. While we see that there is a crisis, we see that kids have been coming across the border by themselves. A seven-year-old kid was wandering around, lost. Another kid was wandering around because he couldn't keep up with the people that were trafficking them to the States, so they left him behind. But still, we're told there is no crisis. It's a challenge. We're going to get there. But then not too long ago, Joe Biden decided to admit, maybe he let it slip, that it is a crisis at the border. And the journalist that we have on tonight, Heather Robinson, did an article that appeared in one of the papers in New York, the New York Post. It was titled, "How Biden's Border Policy Will Increase Sex Trafficking of Children." Now, she's going to talk to us about that. And again, if you listen to mainstream or the liberal media, they make it seem as if there's no crises. And they're supposed to be the forerunners or the forefront people for children and looking out for children. Mm-hmm. But now it seems as if anything goes. So Heather, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we definitely wanted to bring you back. And, you know, just looking at your article, which was, I think it was reposted by Senator Ted Cruz. Yes. It even caught his eye. And I think it's monumental and important that people are looking at this and they're recognizing that there is a crisis. So what made you want to write this piece?
Well, I think that we've all seen the disturbing images of children, a little boy wandering alone, crying, little girls being dropped like packages over the wall. And I wanted to dig in and actually talk to people who were on the border, our Border Patrol agents and investigative journalists who were on the front lines, and to learn what was happening. I knew I had certain ideas, and it turns out that my ideas were on the right track. And, people, including people who have no political interest other than just simply trying to help children, I spoke with one woman in Mexico, in fact, who's running an NGO. This woman has dedicated her life to doing nothing but trying to help children and women who are sex trafficked, which is some of the most grisly, horrible front lines kind of work, you know, to see the abuse of the innocent. Anyway, I care about the innocent. I wanted to investigate and to dig into more what was actually happening. And my conscience was stirred by the images. And I also, you know, I had heard so much about the dismay over the family separation policy, which I understand was hard on many people. But I also, you know, I my understanding is there was more going on behind the scenes than what the mainstream media was repeating. And that right or wrong, whether you support that policy or not, there were reasons for it. So I suspected that, and I wanted to talk to people about what's really happening now. Now that we have a new commander in chief, are children really being protected more? And I wanted to know the answer to that question. And so that's what spurred me to investigate and I am an opinion writer, as you know, Rob. I'm not primarily an investigative journalist, but I spoke with an investigative journalist on the front lines, Laura Logan, about this at length, and also with a Border Patrol agent who recently retired, who was, you know, free to speak because he's retired now, and who he's in touch with other guys and gals on the front lines. And I got a lot of firsthand primary source information about what are the practical effects of this new policy, these new sets of policies.
And what did they tell you? What did they tell you that they're seeing?
Well, for starters, there's tremendous anxiety among our Border Patrol agents. And I heard this from Laura Logan, who's spoken with numerous Border Patrol agents firsthand, who did not feel at liberty to share their names. But they told her about their tremendous anxiety, that they're under pressure to process family units, people who come with children across the border. They are under tremendous pressure to process these units, these groups within 72 hours and release them into the United States. And what numerous Border Patrol agents told investigative reporter Laura Logan is that they do not feel confident that these are all real families. They believe that it's very likely that some of them are traffickers, human traffickers using children to get into the country. And now that family units are not being held for longer periods of time, it's a more doable and lucrative business for traffickers than it was under the previous administration to move children into the country. So this new policy that expedites moving family units or people who claim to be family units through the system quickly is potentially incentivizing human trafficking of children. So it's a policy that may have been intended for good, but there are some very likely bad humanitarian unintended consequences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So then the question becomes, what is the rush on the side of our elected officials, mainly the Biden-Harris administration, as they call themselves? What is a rush? Why are we trying to rush these people in, knowing that although we'll say you need to show up at this particular point in time, they're not going to show up for their hearings for the next steps? They will get here, get lost in the population, and then there you have it. And I just don't get it. I would think that as a country, as a human being, that there would be a degree of sympathy or concern for these kids who are just matched in with these families that they know absolutely nothing about.
Well, here's the thing, Rob. I can't speak to their motivation, you know, but we know there's been a lot of ostensible concern for children on the part of the left. They were very inflamed about the family separation policy. there are no shortage of social scientists and psychiatrists who will tell you it's bad for children to be separated from their parents, to be held at length in a facility. And that all, you know, that is true. I'm sure it is traumatic. So there may be some sincere concern in the mix for children, and this may be intended as a, you know, a remedy to this family separation. But I think that, you know, we can't turn a blind eye to the likely reality that for certain children, you know, for a lot of them, it might be better because they're not being separated from their parents. But for those children, and we don't know how many there are, who are being moved by traffickers, you know, it's going to be, let's put it this way. I don't say this lightly because I'm sure it's very traumatic for children to be separated from their parents. But to be separated from your parents in a secure facility, there's a lot worse that can happen to children than that. And there are children who we have reason to believe are falling prey to the worst kinds of abuse and depravity. And that in the likelihood appears to be that this policy is going to, you know, and may already be increasing the numbers of children who are trafficked into the pornography industry, into drug trafficking, into prostitution, or commercial sexual exploitation, I should say. So we can't turn a blind eye to the unintended consequence potentially of something that may be meant for the good. You know, and I mean, some people believe this is very cynical on the part of Democratic politicians, you know, that they just want more illegal immigrants in the country because they want voters to side with them. I mean, that's speculation. And I, you know, as a journalist, I focus this piece on the firsthand primary source interviews of people on the border and in Mexico who are concerned about children. I didn't get into the larger political agendas that may be flying around. So that's speculation. But what I did try to investigate, you know, through speaking with people on the front lines is what's actually happening and what are the consequences of these policies.
Yeah, it's a really great article. I recommend everyone should go check out. Heather, who is trafficking these children? Is it just the gangs and the cartels like most people would suspect, or is it other factions?
What was explained to me, Andrew, by Michael Gramley, who's a retired Border Patrol agent who worked for 25 years in Yuma, Arizona on the border. He was also a U.S. He also worked in intelligence. Is that he said that essentially Mexico at this point is controlled by cartels. The border, at any rate, is controlled by cartels. These are gangster groups who don't let anyone pass without paying them. These are all realities that most Americans, especially on the left, are completely naive to, is the way he explained it. Now you have people crossing, not just from Mexico, but from Guatemala, from Honduras, from other parts of Latin America. So in the old days, what used to happen, as he explained it to me, is that Mexican people who wanted to get here and didn't have a green card or, a work permit or whatever, would pay a smuggler. They'd pay a smuggler, you know, whatever, a few hundred dollars. And the smuggler would know, I guess, certain points of entry, how to sneak past Border Patrol. But as illegal border crossing has increased, as the problems in Mexico and other Central American countries have intensified. And that's a whole other piece of this. You know, a lot of Americans don't understand that the deteriorating situation in Mexico and Central America, crime has risen drastically in recent years. Tremendous problems with drugs, with gangs. Some people say the Mexican government is on the ropes, basically, that they're hanging by a thread and the cartels practically control Mexico. And so you have a huge crime rate. You have a lot of poverty. The murder rate is six times what it is in America. So, you know, it's the one thing that I think that the liberals are not wrong about. I mean, life there is very, very hard for a lot of these people, and they're desperate. They want to come here. So now it's not just Mexicans, it's also Central Americans, and they're paying thousands of dollars to people to get them through. So here's where it gets a little more complicated, is that they're very poor people. They don't have that kind of money. So what Agent Gramley explained to me is that traffickers, this is where traffickers come in. They are kind of independent contractors who say, they set up a deal where they'll say to these poor people, okay, you know, we'll get you from Guatemala, say, into Yuma, or your kid, you know, we'll get you out of this mess. They won't tell them, you know, we're going to put you in a brothel, but they'll say, we'll get your kid to America, but they have to work once they get here. So these families will agree to. And then the traffickers, who for whom this is a business, moving people as if they're moving furniture or moving any other commodity or drugs, they then have to pay each cartel family along the way. So this is racking up a big debt. You know, this is their business. Let's say it costs $10,000 to get a kid, you know, from, or they say it costs that, you know, they probably, you know, pad the, you know, account, who knows, you know, these aren't necessarily, they're obviously not honest businessmen, right? So they're going to say, okay, $10,000, we get your kid in. Now your kid's going to pay the debt. And so that's where you have what they call stash houses, you know, where a lot of the girls are taken. It's very sad. You know, a lot of the boys apparently work in landscaping, which sounds like it wouldn't be so bad, but it turns out to be slave labor. And this is now, these problems have been migrated now into our country. So you have enforcers in every major city making sure that once these kids get here, they're working as slaves basically to pay their debts to the traffickers. So it's their business. This is a business. And frankly, those are, you know, maybe the comparatively lucky ones, because a lot of kids just don't make it. You know, the way Mike explained it to me, he said, if a kid dies on the way, you know, what's a family going to do? There's no recourse. You know, none of this is legal. It's like as if a package got lost. It's very sad, you know, and so this is a business for people, for these, you know, evil people. They traffic in human beings, and the people of Central America and Latin America, you know, and Mexico, you know, my understanding is that some of them may not even know, I mean, you know, how bad it can be for their kid. I mean, you know, you wonder how can people do this, but he seemed to feel that sometimes there's deception or at least spin involved, you know, where they probably aren't going to say to a family, yes, we will turn your daughter into a prostitute. Maybe they'll say, we'll put her to work in a shop. So this is a business, you know, human beings, including children, are a business.
Right. And just listen to what you said is a very sad story.
Here you have these people who maybe think they're being humanitarians saying, oh, you know, don't separate children from their parents. Well, you know, that's a fine sentiment, but my take is that they have no idea the depths of depravity and horror that can be visited on a child. You know, being separated from one's parents in a secure facility is nothing compared to being raped by 50 men a night. And this is some of what's happened. Part of what, you know, our country may be enabling with all the ridiculous naivete, which isn't to say that the situation in Mexico and Central America is good either. I'm not saying that it's Shangri-La where these people are coming from. Obviously, it's very bad.
It's very bad. And then our country, we have decriminalized prostitution, knowing that a lot of these young girls that are coming here, 10, 12, and 13, are put in brothels. And now the prostitution, well, it is in New York City, I'll say.
Well, not for underage, though, Rob. That's not legal.
Right. Not for underage, but who's to say what their age is? Is someone going to go in and ask?
Well, there are safe harbor laws in New York City, though. And that is actually, I mean,
I hear what you're saying, but, you know.
Yeah, their teenagers are not. If a teenager is found, I can say that I do know, they will not be criminally prosecuted in New York.
But anyway, who's going to say the kid's age? How do they know what they could lie about the kid's age?
Well, sure. Listen, there are all kinds of abuses taking place, and there are plenty of kids we don't even know about, of course, that are being held in these houses that are. I interviewed a woman some years ago, Rachel Lloyd, who runs a group called GEMS. She runs a home and she rescues these girls. She herself was a victim of commercial sexual exploitation as a teenager, very brave woman. And she goes in and, she goes out in the middle of the night and, gets little girls out of jail. And she was one of the leaders of reform in New York State because she lobbied to say anybody who's underage, who's working in prostitution, isn't really doing it willingly. I mean, that it should not be prosecuted, as a criminal. And so that, I know that has changed in New York, and New York led the way with that. So that's a whole sort of, that's kind of a related but separate set of issues.
But it's still a bleak life for these kids. And like you said, individuals who are thinking that they're helping these kids by don't separate them, not knowing that if this is the family and they're coming over, and then you have these cartels that are controlling the border. And just imagine coming from Central America all the way across to get to Mexico, to cross our border, to come to America, because where they are living now is abysmal. But yet still, just to get to America, the country that the left is saying is systematically racist.
Yeah.
Why would they? I mean, think about it. It's crazy. Why would you want these individuals to come to a country that you've identified as systemically racist because they don't like brown and black skin, but yet and still, you're bringing these people. It's like you're saying, leave your torture, come to our torture, and we're going to torture you even more because we don't think you got the message in your own country. So we're going to stick it to you even more.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. And for people not to stop, I mean, educated people, and I even hate saying educated because I think common sense applies to anyone. With an education or not. Maybe with an education, you have a little bit more intelligence, but anyone with half a brain, and I even hate saying that, but anyone with reasonability would think, wait a minute, why would I want to leave my country to come to your country if you're saying that your country is so racist? I should stay put until you guys figure it all out and then I'll come. Well, but that's not the answer. People will come.
Poor people may be misinformed about a lot, but they definitely know that they know that much. They know that it's better in America, than
because if you can make it in America, you can make it anywhere. So they will come.
They don't know what their children may be in for. They don't because they are. This is something else that a woman told me, Rob, who, is this woman who runs this orphanage. Her name is, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it correctly, because Teresa Ulloa Suarez, she's director of the Latin American branch of the Coalition Against Trafficking International. And she estimated to me that 60%, that as high as 60% of Latin American children who set to cross the border, either alone or with smugglers, have been caught by cartels and are being abused in child pornography or for drug trafficking. So that was a shock to me. I mean, to hear that she's saying most. So, I mean, that was her estimate. And she is a person who works directly with children. But I guess what the other thing she told me that I didn't fit into the article that I can tell you is she said, and I could tell this woman was not a political woman at all. She was a humanitarian. She's a person who's giving her time and her life to saving children. So this wasn't about being anti, left or right. I just said, well, what do you think of these policies? And she said, it's a very hard call because it's very bad here. It's very bad here. And they want a chance to come to America. But on balance, she said, I think it's wrong for President Biden to say what he said, because these people, they're poor. A lot of them don't have an education. They just hear America is the golden land and Biden is a nice man and he'll take care of your children. And these are people who are, they're simple people. They're not exposed to all kinds of, news sources. And they think that where they are is bad, and they don't you know, she was saying they don't really imagine, you know, they don't necessarily know that their children are not going to make it. And they think that America is the golden land, you know, and Joe Biden is the kindly old president who's going to take care of them. And that's their hope and their prayer. So hearing her say that, it gave me great empathy for these people. I do feel very sorry for them, but, you know, but she herself said, you know, that doesn't mean that this is right. She doesn't, you know, she's no political conservative. I mean, this woman, she's a Mexican woman in the trenches, you know, who doesn't have any stake in the politics of our country. But she was saying that she thinks that it was not good what Biden did, you know, to say that, because, that, you know, these people, they're sending their children, and a lot of these children are not even making it alive. It was very irresponsible, and terrible as it may be where they are, they're better off where they are than, you know, in the hands of criminals.
Absolutely. And for all that talk the media did that President Trump's border policies were inhumane and the photos of the kids in cages, it sounds like from Heather's research that Joe Biden's border policies are actually more inhumane for the children than what President Trump's were. Would you agree, Heather?
I believe so, Andrew.
Unbelievable that they attacked Trump's policy, whereas Joe's, and like you said, they're from simple beings, simple meanings, and they hear this old man saying, I will take care of you, send your children here. And they're looking at, this is a bad life for them here, but if they can just make it to America, because I had a cousin who was there and they're doing great. If I can just get my kid there, they're just looking at where they are now is horrible. And I remember once Trump saying, maybe if we could help those countries fix the problems that they have. And of course, that would be a huge haul in itself, because it's not just the people, it's the government that is corrupt with the gangs, and they control everything. They're so intertwined with the government that no matter if we were to send the money, the gangs or the cartels would get the money because they control basically everything that's there. So to get my child out of this, knowing that my daughter could possibly be raped, and then to give their kids birth control, I mean, that broke my heart to hear that. That you're sending your young daughter and you're going to give her birth control because you know more than likely she's going to get raped, or not more than likely, she will get raped. So to have to deal with that psychologically and that's stuff that we're not telling the people. This is what they're having to go through. We're just looking at, let them come here. You know, some are just looking at the political aspect of it as opposed to the humanity.
Mm-hmm. And I think they, you know, people want to feel good about themselves, and they want to feel like we're this generous people and country. And there's a certain amount of that too, of honestly vanity in it, feeling like, oh, you know, let me do this. Like, it's, you know, we've talked about these things before, Rob. A lot of times the elites in this country, you know, want to feel magnanimous and enlightened. And
altruism, the elitists, we know what's best.
But it's not altruism. I mean, it's not really any sacrifice on their part. You know, they pull. Anyway, I don't mean to get into a political thing, because for the purposes of this article, really, I tried to very much focus on what I was hearing. And it was very important to me as a matter of conscience, honestly, that I not in any way, you know, if I hadn't heard what I heard, I mean, I wasn't going to write it if I thought that, you know, what I was writing was in any way going to be in any way detrimental to children.
Heather, I'll say this. I mean, as you started off saying that you are an opinion writer, and we'll get more into that, but you wrote what you heard and you shared it with us.
Yeah, we really appreciate Heather sharing her details on that article in the New York Post. And you guys are tuned in to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or download the America Out Loud app. You can also go to the website AmericaOutLoud.com to keep track of all the great shows and articles. We will be back with more from guest Heather Robinson, and we will discuss LeBron James, the Derek Chauvin guilty verdict, and a whole lot more.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Five incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello and welcome back to After Dark with Rob and Andrew. And we're here with our special guest, Heather Robinson. And then your article, How Biden's Border Policy Will Increase Sex Trafficking of Children. And I think Andrew had the question that, so they attack Trump's policy, but it seems as though Biden's policy is more harmful to the kids or to children. And from what you've learned from the different interviews, you agree or disagree?
I agree. I think on balance, even if for the majority, let's say, and I don't know if it's even the majority, but like even if for some, it means not being separated from their parents, for instance, and getting to come to America. For a significant minority, I think it means a nightmare. You know, and the idea that this is better when really it's having the effect, from what I've heard from the interviews of people on the front lines, Laura Logan, who's a pioneering journalist, investigative reporter who talked to numerous Border Patrol agents and Customs and Border Protection, to a recently retired Border Patrol agent. From what I've heard from them, the pressure our agents are under to push through these families with this huge surge and the mandate to put family units through in 72 hours, no DNA testing, all this amounts to there's no way to really know how many fake families are coming through. And essentially for the children and the minors who are being used, this is a nightmare. And this is incentivizing the use of children. And I think, you know, recently we saw two little girls drop like packages over the wall. That's just a glimpse into this world in which children are our chattel, our you know, product to be moved or used. That's what this policy, this Biden policy, I believe, is enabling. And I'm sure there are some nice families who are getting through also. But I mean, the idea that that justifies that, that, you know, if more kids are trafficked, it's okay because nobody's getting separated from their parents and more nice families are coming through. I mean, that's kind of like saying, you know, it reminds me of the argument that, well, terrorist organizations are okay because they provide social services to a certain large number of people. So even if they murder, you know, 20 kids a year in cold blood and they target civilians, on balance, you know, they're still good because they you know, that's the argument. You know, it's that, well, these things, you know, we have to, but I don't think that way. And I don't think most Americans.
It doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous.
No, if this is enabling human trafficking of children, we need to stop it. We need to, and I think it's a case where it's the principle is that you sometimes need to be firm to be compassionate. That in the big picture would be more compassionate, I believe. Yes.
So you mentioned the big picture and being firm. When we look, and this isn't a, from what you were just describing in your article, this isn't a left or a right situation. This is more humanity, mm-hmm. having compassion for what's
happening. And being, having common sense.
Common sense.
Both.
Right. So that being said, looking overall at Joe Biden and his policy and his, I think it's like 3 months in office and some of the things that are taking place around us in society, mainly the culture aspect of things. I want to pivot just a little bit, and I want to talk about, as we all know, the in the atmosphere, what's happening with Derek Chauvin was recently found guilty on all accounts of killing, murdering. Now we can say that he is a murderer of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. My take on it is that it wasn't about race. He was aggressive. He overextended himself. Granted, the only thing George Floyd had to do was be arrested. And we've got to put that out there. And I want to say to all people, but especially Black people, because it seems to be affecting them, Black men, boys, girls, you cannot resist being arrested. Be arrested if you think that it wasn't fair, live to see another day, and file a complaint. Don't lose your life. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not about they're targeting me because I'm Black, because there have been so many people. I think this year, 200 incidents whereby people were killed. And of that number, it might be 169, but of that number, only 20 have been Black. So what color were the other people? Mm. That's something that the media doesn't tell us. We don't know about. We're only focusing on Blacks, because we say Black Lives Matter. But what about the other 100 or so people that lost their lives? So again, if you're stopped by the police and if you're going to be arrested, be arrested and don't try to fight back. Chauvin was pronounced guilty and we have people out in the streets, they're dancing about it, they're happy. Okay, whatever floats your boat. But in my opinion, two lives were lost. Mm-hmm. Floyd isn't coming back to his family and Derek Chauvin has been removed from his family. We also have the incident with Devontae Wright, 20-year-old man who was accidentally killed when he was being arrested, and he decided to try to wrestle away from the police, get in his car and drive off. And one of the police arresting officers reached for her taser, so she says, or the story goes, and she got her gun and she shot him. He's now dead. I personally believe that it was an accident, a costly accident, because a man has lost his life and a police officer is probably living in guilt because of what she's done. And now we have the entire world, so it seems, mad at her because of the way the media has changed the narrative to she was a white woman, she was racist, and she killed a Black man. And that's what we're talking about, journalism and the fairness of it. I don't think that the journalists have been fair because they have rushed to judgment. You have a lot of individuals on the left, entertainment industry, that have already found her guilty. And they're putting this out there so that even if she were tried, there's been so much negative publicity out there. And you can't say I've never heard of it, because you can go across the world and they'll say they've heard of it also. So you would have to be extremely naive to say, oh, no one has heard this. No one is paying attention. Well, there might be some people, but the basics of this, that there's racism out there and that white cops are killing black people, that is a narrative. And I would beg to say that everyone has heard it or are hearing this. And she's resigned and from the police force, and she's now waiting for the next steps, what's going to happen, why they do an investigation. One other thing I want to add is that all of this is taking place in liberal, democratically run towns, ran cities, whereby they're in charge. And it has been that way. And think about this also. In Minnesota, we have George Floyd. Now we have Devontae Wright. All of this is taking place in Minnesota. And let me add another layer onto this. Not too long ago, two teenage girls, black, having an argument or disagreement. And apparently one of the girls, I think they were both 16 or 15, had a knife and she was about to stab the other girl. Someone called the police. The police came and they saw her knocking one of the 15-year-old girls over and getting ready to stab her. The police said, drop your weapon. She continued. They shot her four times. She's dead. She had a knife. The media is spinning the story that she did not have a knife. In fact, they're saying that, oh, there's nothing to this. And one of the founding members or an activist for Black Lives Matter sent out a tweet, and it went like this. Teenagers have been having fights, including fights involving knives, for eons. We don't need police to address these situations by showing up to the scene and using a weapon against one of the teenagers. Y'all need help. I mean that sincerely. No, like, what school did she go to? And if you're saying you don't need the police showing up, who called the police? And what about the girl whose life they saved? What is she saying? Now, I saw a little bit of an interview that she gave, and she said, they were trying to hurt me. They were trying to kill me. And the police told her to stop, and they shot her. There was an eyewitness to the event who realized that his home security taped it. And he was questioned about it. And he said the police had no choice, either kill the girl with a knife or there would have been two people killed, because the girl with the knife would have killed the other girl. And then the police would have shot her or shoot her and save the other girl. 15-year-old girls, black. Now, again, this is in Minnesota, Democratic cities or towns. Not too long ago, a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old. The 12-year-old killed the 13-year-old with a knife, both black. Now, I'm black, and I would say there's a problem in the black community that needs to be solved. It has nothing to do with the police. It has nothing to do with white people. It has to do with black people. It needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed fast. The media can't solve this. They can spin it 12 ways or 7 ways to Sunday and still get it wrong. Black politicians, they could solve this, but they want to blame white people. LeBron James, he interjected himself. He can't solve it. He's living in a multi-million dollar mansion in LA. Barack Obama, maybe he could solve it. He could get out and talk and say there has to be a change. But that change was supposed to have taken place about, I think, a decade and 2 years ago when he became the first black president. But still, there wasn't a change. There is a problem in the black community. Yes, we could say, well, you know, had they been white, the police wouldn't have shot them. Well, we could say a lot of things. Had they been blue, had they been purple. But do you see this happening in the Chinese community, in the Indian community, in the Japanese community? Here in America? No. It's in the black community. So I can speak on that because I see it. And we had a guest on not too long ago, Bebe Diamond, and she talked about the same thing, problems in the black community. And one of the things that she identified, and statistics show it also, is that the lack of the black man in the family. It has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed fast, because that is the only way we can heal and move forward. And all those race baiters that are out there saying that this shouldn't have happened. You're right, it shouldn't have happened. And Black Lives Matter. But until you prove that your life matters in your own community, how can you get someone else to agree with you? So now I've spoken on that aspect of it as a Black person. I would ask you guys, what are your thoughts as far as the coverage from a news aspect on these stories?
Well, you know, Rob, the one detail I understand was omitted from some of the news coverage was that the girl had a knife and was lunging at the other girl. And that's very relevant to the story. So that definitely shouldn't have been omitted. That's pretty much my only comment.
Extremely relevant. Yeah. So why would they not add that to the story?
Yeah, the news media, they always like to blow up the situation, especially when it fits this narrative that America is this racist, terrible place, and it's a Black person that gets killed by a police officer. As Rob mentioned, the statistics, all races are killed by police officers pretty much evenly if you go by demographics and whatnot. So really, it's just a lot of the media taking things out of context. Like Heather mentioned, they did not mention the detail on the stabbing incident. And then you've got celebrities and entertainers like LeBron James who are just adding fuel to the fire, trying to stir up the racial flames. And it's just all unnecessary. This cop, in this case, with the stabbing incident, was clearly just doing his job. He saved a woman's life and is a hero in my book.
Mm-hmm. Question, do you guys think, and I, you know, I don't know, I mean, I don't really know the details any more than that. I haven't studied this story in detail. I did see something recently on the news, but is there any maybe validity to the question of whether this had been two white girls fighting and one of them lunging at the other? I mean, is it reasonable to ask the question, you know, would the cop have been as likely to shoot as opposed to try something else?
We can always supposition what if, but when we look at what's happening, we look at the numbers, we look at who is happening with, we look at the statistics. Again, as a Black man, I would say there is a problem in the Black community that needs to be addressed. Yes, there are some situations whereby it happens to whites and it happens in the white community. But proportionally, it happens more so in the Black community. People don't like to hear that. They don't want to address that problem. But why not address the problem? Now, you guys can't speak on it because, well, we're not Black. We see this happening. What is going on? What I'm telling you what's going on, there is a problem and it needs to be addressed. And the only way we can address it is by identifying it and just admitting the fact that there is a problem. That is a first step to correcting the problem, is to admit the problem. Why were these young girls, or why was that young girl with a knife, 16, 15 years old, and someone came out and said, oh, she's not gonna be able to graduate, she's not gonna be in school. Well, why wasn't she in school on that day? And what's equally interesting is that this was taking place as they were reading the verdict to Derek Chauvin. So as they were finding him guilty, she was out committing a crime or trying to commit a crime to kill someone. So my question now would be, why is it, to address LeBron James, who said, oh, I'm tired of this happening to Black people. Dallery Jarrett, who worked in Barack Obama's administration, said the same thing. Why are they shooting Black kids, Black girls? Why is this happening? Well, I would say, you know, I agree with them. Why is the police not allowing two Black girls to fight and then one Black girl to kill the other? Why is a white police coming in to stop this? I guess in that instance, the racist police helped out because he prevented the death of a Black girl. But the media doesn't see it that way. They see it just the opposite, to pit the two against each other. And I have to admit, eventually, that tinderbox is going to explode. The keg is going to explode. Maxine Waters coming out saying things with, we need to challenge, we need to stay in the street, and we need to push back. And it's like, wait a minute, you're inciting a riot. Did anyone go to her and say, we need to arrest you? She's still in her committees on the Hill, but they attacked Trump and said, oh, he incited insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at this, it's like, but the left is doing that and then some. You look at the other day, Maxine Waters, the way she approached Jim Jordan, and then Val Demings the exact same way. Nasty, belligerent, telling him, you shut up, you do this, you do that. I'm like, wait a minute. This is your colleague. Now, I would venture to say, had he pushed back and said, excuse me, you shut up, you don't tell me that, immediately they would have said, they being the media, a mm-hmm. white man is attacking black women. You know mm-hmm. why? Because that is the order of the day. They can say that now with impunity. They can say whatever they want to say now. And if, as a white person, definitely a white man, if you push back, you will be labeled. I'm about to say something that I wouldn't ordinarily say. We have got to play the playbook or use the playbook that they're using to push back. We have got to get black women, conservative black women, on the Hill. That is the only way we will win this battle.
Mm-hmm.
The white conservatives cannot push back. The men cannot push back mm-hmm. because they will immediately say that a white man is attacking a black woman. So Val Demings, I don't know if you guys saw it, she was extremely nasty on the Hill to Jim Jordan. Maxine Waters was extremely nasty. This is just the beginning. Mark my word.
Right. And just to clarify, Rob, we don't want to elect these black women just because they're black, but there's also some great women out there.
Absolutely. Like I'm glad you said that.
And a lot of great candidates out there that are black conservatives.
I am glad you pointed that out because we don't want to elect them just simply because they're black. There are a lot of conservative black women who are there that should run and can run, but we need the GOP to get behind them and to support them.
I'll tell you one thing I believe, you know, I don't think anybody out there has more guts and backbone and character than black conservatives. And, you know, I think that what, you know, to deal with the just to be so embattled and, you know, from the left, from white elitists, from the elements within the black community, you know, to be so mischaracterized and maligned and to stand for your principles, you know, just great respect. And you know that anyone who has chosen that hard path has a lot of toughness and character. So we'd be super lucky to have a woman like that as a leader.
Yeah, we would. But, you know, and as Andrew said, and I'm glad he pointed that out, because that's all too important. We don't want them there just because of the color of their skin.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is to be a public black,
absolutely,
you have to be strong.
Their gender, right.
Whatever else may or may not be true of you, I think you have to be a person of strong backbone and moral character, because we know one of the hardest things in the world is to stand against the crowd. Let's face it. Not many people have the character and the inner strength to do that. And I think to be a black conservative now in this country, it requires tremendous toughness and self-belief and a leader needs to have that. A leader needs to sometimes do what he or she believes is logical and is best for the country. I think we're right now, we have a leader, I'm talking about Biden, you know, who's
Biden. Okay.
Yeah, I think he's just a shell, basically. And he's someone who does not have that kind of character. He's I think that he's caving. And I think that if he had a stronger character, I don't really believe he's a radical leftist. I think that he's just too weak to stand up to these people. And I think that one thing that most people who are, you know, who are black conservatives, just by definition of having to take this stand and be maligned and be, you know, mischaracterized and misunderstood and slandered and everything else, you know, that's a person who has inner strength and will be able to act with common sense, with wisdom, you know, even if it means being reviled and attacked. And that's, you know, we need leaders who have the strength, you know, not to forge ahead despite, you know, other compelling arguments. And, you know, we need someone who can be flexible and compromise and listen, et cetera. But I think that a leader needs to be strong, you know, and Black conservatives are strong people.
I agree. That's what we need. We need people that are strong, people who are willing to go the extra mile. I mean, I think in this society as a whole, Black, white, red, blue, being a conservative, you have a bold eye on your back. And we definitely need people who are willing to fight the fight and go the distance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And not cave to being bullied.
Yeah, and just to comment on what we were speaking of earlier, why is it we know the name of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, George Floyd, Dante Wright, Breonna Taylor, but not the names of the 875 victims shot dead in Chicago last year? Thank you so much to our guest, Heather Robinson, for joining us tonight. Go to over to the New York Post and check out her article, How Biden's Border Policies Will Increase Sex Trafficking of Children to the United States. Thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com, who just celebrated its 5th anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. We will see you next time, and remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.